Believe it or not, we're going to talk astrology now on Sunday Extra, in a way, as we go in search of America's forgotten astrology queen, or at least meet the writer who did. Courtney Ann Lefebvre has just released the book Follow the Signs, Searching for Linda Goodman, which is the astrological stage name of the forgotten astrology queen. Her 1968 book Sun Signs had astronomical sales, numbering over 30 million. When Linda Goodman died in 1995. For very personal reasons, Courtney embarked on a mission to write a feminist biography of Linda Goodman that would redeem a misunderstood and forgotten figure. And while Follow the Signs is the fascinating result, it's also fair to say that things worked out very differently from what she was imagining. The New Yorker describes Follow the Signs as an adventure tale, blending fiction, criticism, and memoir. By day, Courtney is Assistant Professor of English at the University of North Dakota. And for what it's worth, like me, she's an Aries. Courtney, welcome to Sunday Extra.
Thanks so much for having me.
Now, you describe Linda Goodman as America's first superstar astrologer. Could you give us a quick outline of her career and why that epithet applies?
Absolutely. So, of course, astrology is something that humans have studied for millennia. But prior to Linda Goodman, astrology was something that people thought of as being kind of obscure, and it was written in this very esoteric, very difficult to understand language. And what Linda Goodman did with her books in the 1960s and the 1970s was she brought that very difficult language and made it something that the mainstream consumer could understand. And so astrology then, with the advent of her book, Sun Signs in 1968, it became something that was very popular. And so she is someone that I think of as sort of the foremother of astrology in the United States, and then also, you know, around the world as well.
Yeah, she certainly had a mass market for her works. How did she get to that position in life?
You know, it's actually kind of a funny story. Linda Goodman's life is a little bit mysterious. And I think the way that she got to this position was that she was a typical Aries woman, and she was stubborn, and she believed that she could do it. And so she had an astrology teacher in New York. And besides that, she was mostly self-taught. And so I think she's really a story of somebody who just believed that she could do it, and she did it.
What sort of things had Linda Goodman done in her life and her professional work before she became a hugely commercially successful astrologer?
So she did a lot of different things. She was known for having a radio show called Love Letters from Linda, which is where she got the name Linda, where what she would do is she would read letters from soldiers who were abroad, and then she would pair it with a love song. And I think that's so lovely because I think we begin to see the origin of what she would write about, which was about how do we separate people that are very different from each other, or in the case of the Love Letters from Linda radio show, people who are physically distant, which is also to say, how do we make connections with other people, which I think is what astrology is all about. So she was a radio host, and then there's also, it was rumored that she wrote speeches, but her life in this way is a little bit mysterious, but that's what I know about it.
And I certainly discovered Linda Goodman through you, Courtney, but how did you discover Linda, and what effect did she have on your life?
Oh, well, I found Linda Goodman in a very old-fashioned way. I found her at the library when I was about 13 years old. And of course, I'm much younger than Linda Goodman, so it was perhaps a little bit of a funny thing for me to find her decades after her relatively, you know, high popularity. But I found her books at the library, and I was just so seduced by her language that I became a devotee of her work. And so I read all of her work, and then she became a kind of guide to my life and love life as well.
So tell us about the decision to move from being a reader of Linda Goodman to someone who wanted to write about her life and work.
Absolutely. So I am also an Aries. And so I feel like my quest was probably very similar to Linda's. I was a little bit unqualified, but I was a PhD student, and one thing that I had always thought was really interesting and quite tragic about Linda Goodman was she had this really popular literary career, and I felt like she had made such a contribution to the study of astrology and then also to the study of spirituality. But then in the 1970s, her daughter Sally commits suicide, and Linda refused to believe that Sally was dead, and instead she went on this decades-long search looking for her. And I felt like she was mercilessly mocked in the media for this. And I felt like her legacy had gotten kind of marred by this very cruel response to the grief that she was experiencing. And so as a PhD student, I thought, well, why don't I try to redeem this and write a biography of Linda Goodman that showed not only she was this really powerful literary figure, but that she's also someone who has been misunderstood.
Well, certainly the way you've described it, this extraordinary commercial success and then real personal tragedy in her own life and a star, for want of a better expression, that had faded pretty dramatically. That does sound very much like it has the makings of an extraordinary biography. At the same time, your book is in a way an account of how your plans to write a conventional biography of Linda Goodman went awry. In fact, you reveal that the first draft title of your PhD dissertation that the book is based on was Linda Goodman, A Failed Biography. Could you tell us why conventional biography, as you discovered, just wasn't going to fly with Linda Goodman?
So when we think of having a biography, ideally what you will have is you will have this beautiful, pristine, generous archive full of verified sources and lots of documents and letters and diaries. And so you look through all of those documents and then you create a verifiable biography. And so I naively thought, oh, I bet Linda Goodman, being this superstar literary figure, has such a thing. But for me, somebody who was an interloper in her life decades after she was popular, I discovered that she was a figure that didn't have such an archive, or if she did have that kind of an archive, I didn't have any access to it. And so what I realized was that if I was going to write a biography of Linda Goodman or to try to interrogate her life in some way, I was going to have to go about that in a little bit of a different way than I had anticipated.
It was a different time, obviously, much less digital records, but still for somebody who'd achieved such fame, you would think that there would be a huge amount of material. And indeed, Linda Goodman had published what you might describe as an idiosyncratic autobiography. What are some of the issues you found with the documentary backstory that you discovered in your work, Courtney?
Well, you know, to be an astrologer means that you believe in energy from the planets. And so maybe you're someone that doesn't believe in things that perhaps you and I believe about the human body or about the cosmos. And of course, astrology is something that's relatively mainstream now, but some people that study astrology also believe in all kinds of far out things. So for instance, I did an interview with someone very early on, and there was a certain point in the interview where I got nervous. And one of the questions that I asked was a question that I knew the answer to, but I was just nervous. And so I asked the question anyway. And the question was, how old would Linda Goodman be if she was alive today?
Which you think would be a pretty straightforward question.
Absolutely. Super straightforward. And so I thought this person was going to say, oh, she would be 95 or 96. And instead, this person said, well, Courtney, Linda Goodman didn't believe in time. You know, she thought that was an illusion. So she would probably say that she was about 400 years old. And so I encountered several instances where I was trying to lock her into, you know, the reality that you and me and probably a lot of your listeners share, but I couldn't really do that. And so I had also to think about, how do I write about this woman in a way that not only makes sense to my readers, but also makes sense to who she was and what she believed.
On Sunday Extra, we're speaking with Courtney Ann Lefebvre, who's the author of Follow the Signs, Searching for Linda Goodman, America's Forgotten Astrology Queen. Let's delve a little bit more into some of the things you discovered about Linda, Courtney. Beginning with some of those unusual beliefs, could you give us a bit of a sort of highlight reel of some of the unorthodox beliefs that you found Linda believed in, and perhaps also how they impacted physically on her life and health?
In one of her final books called Star Signs, she outlines several tools that she thinks you can use to achieve immortality. So, for instance, in this book, she outlines that if you drink from red-colored water glasses, the red color of the glass will infuse a kind of healing energy into whatever kind of liquid or substance is in the glass. She believed in something called purple plates, where you have these purple plates, like a physical plate, and this physical plate has a kind of charged energy to it, and you can put those certain places for healing. Also, it's rumored that she was very into sweets. She was also a diabetic, but she believed that through some of her methods of putting things in red glasses or putting things on purple plates, she could eat Little Debbies and Hostesses and possibly candy bars, and it wouldn't harm her in any way. She also believed in immortality, as I was talking about before, and so that you could live and live and live.
And this is very unusual, Courtney, but she seemed to have quite a, well, what's the right word to use for this? But she was interested in the penis of Osiris. Is that right?
Yes, she was, which is a little bit of a funny thing because Osiris is a mythological figure. And so he did not walk among us. But yes, she was very interested in stories of reunion, you know, because she also had this lover that she proclaimed was disappeared or had lost. And so from my understanding, the Isis and Osiris myth held a lot of fascination for her. But it's also a little bit funny because it's not really a story of reunification. Isis and Osiris, from my understanding, don't get back together. Osiris's body is just put all over the world. And so in her book, Star Signs, which was written in the late 80s, she describes a man coming to visit her, and this man tells her that Osiris's phallus has been buried underneath the Hollywood Cross in California. And this man says, "Linda, I would like you to find this because I believe it's there." And so Linda, loving a good search, decided that she would do this. And again, this is all a little bit speculative. My archive was a little bit flimsy. But from my understanding, she tried to map this particular location in Hollywood, California, underneath the Hollywood Cross. And so in the book, I talk about visiting a psychic. And I said, "Listen, I know this sounds cuckoo, but could you tell me what you think Linda Goodman was talking about?" And the psychic said there was something there, but it was just a box. Obviously, there was no phallus. But yes, that was something that apparently preoccupied Linda Goodman during the later portion of her life.
Yes, the later portion of her life does seem to be a pretty troubled phase, and one where really the tragedy of what had happened to her daughter overshadowed things in many ways. What did you discover about Sally and her death and the effect that her death had on Linda?
I think what I discovered was that it was so devastating, which obviously makes complete and total sense. And also that it was something that she really grappled with accepting, and perhaps her role in it as well, if she had any contribution to her daughter's depression and suicide. If you look at the book Love Signs, which was published in the late 70s, which also was this blockbuster success, it's about 1,000 pages long. There's a couple different letters to Sally in the front, and they're really heartbreaking, and they're also a bit cryptic as well. One of them is sort of a reimagining of Peter Pan, where Sally comes home, and then one is also a very direct letter to Sally asking her to come home. And so I was just really taken by her profound sadness. But then also in my research, what I discovered was that Linda actively looked for Sally. She had missing advertisements for Sally posted all over the United States. I talked with one person in particular in Maine who got entangled with Linda Goodman and her search, which ended up being ultimately quite sinister. And it just really seemed that Linda threw all of her resources into finding Sally. So for Love Signs, her second book, she was paid an unprecedented amount of money at $2.25 million. And from what I could find is that she spent all of that money looking for Sally. And so her grief was profound, and also her efforts to find her were also quite rigorous as well.
And in a way, it felt to me that the profoundness of grief and the way that people deal with it is the sort of underlying and perhaps unifying theme of Follow the Signs, because you don't just deal with Linda's grief. A strong presence in the book is also your own grief. And you write that those who grieve, you say, like those who practice astrology, enter a fraught space. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit more about that and how you examined your own grief in Follow the Signs.
Absolutely. So one of the reasons as a younger woman that I really connected with Linda Goodman was that she had this really devastating experience with grief that she was so transparent about. And so for me, when I was 25, I lost my own mother, and I found myself, even though I knew that my mother had truly died, I didn't believe that she was alive somewhere waiting for me. I found myself really longing for her. And so it really gave me some insight into Linda Goodman, and probably to anyone who is grieved, that there is a certain amount of longing for the person who is lost, and that sometimes that longing can feel perhaps a bit funny because you know the person is gone, you know there's nothing you can do, but you still want them. And so that desire to find a different ending that I think Linda Goodman really went for, I actually think is something quite natural. And Linda Goodman is simply a person who just pursued it because she had resources and money. And maybe some of us would pursue that if we had the same resources. But of course, you know, part of grief is also acceptance of loss. And so that's also something that I think I took from Linda Goodman's story, even if her own acceptance was a bit elusive in the end.
Yes, and perhaps there were some things she wasn't able to accept. And you mentioned that in some ways her search for her daughter took on a sort of sinister character as well. Could you speak a little bit about that as a gateway to telling us whether at the end of your journey with Linda Goodman, you think of her in a profoundly different way from where you began?
Absolutely. So I never knew Linda Goodman, and part of this is a bit of speculation, but in researching her story, I feel like there were moments when she came to points of desperation. And also moments where she might have been manipulated by people around her who were interested in preying on her fortune, and also this longing in her grief to find her daughter. And so I think some of the sinister elements came from that, where she was pushed to having this certain kind of desperation to find Sally. So if you read the book, you will see that there were moments where perhaps there were inklings of violence or the threat of violence to try to get answers and information. And I love this question about how researching Linda might have changed my own relationship to her. And when I think of that, one of the foundational texts for me of thinking about biography is a little bit of an old book by Leon Adel, who is a biographer. And one of the things that he talks about is that writing a biography is a little bit like falling in love. So you pick a subject, and of course you pick the subject because you love the subject. And so you're willing to invest time and energy into researching and learning about your subject. But inevitably, as Leon Adel says, you will find things out about this person that tarnishes this view or this love of them. So while writing a biography is a little bit like falling in love, part of the falling in love is realizing that the person that you've chosen to write about is a real person with flaws. And so I definitely had that with Linda Goodman. And ultimately, I still love her, even with all of her flaws, because I think she's really human. And I think the things that make her flawed are also the things that make so many of us flawed as well.
Fascinating. At the end of the book, Courtney, you talk about quiet inheritances, the way that people can be affected by things they're not aware of. In that sense, what do you see as the legacy of Linda Goodman today?
One of the reasons I really wanted to write this book is that astrology is so popular now. It's something that pop culture has really embraced. And for me, when I look at all of that, I see Linda Goodman, because she was the person that gave us the language to talk about astrology. She took something that was once very difficult and very obscure, and she translated it into language that you and I could talk about. So even if you don't know who Linda Goodman is, I think her influence is still all around us.
Is she, in another way, also the sort of founding mother of the commercialization of astrology?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's really what she did. And I also think that's one reason I think she occupies a little bit of a funny space in the world of astrology, is because she's not wholly serious. You know, I think a lot of very serious astrologers might kind of laugh at her, and that's fine. But I also think not all things are for all people. And I think her very particular role was as a pop astrologer.
Well, I've got to say, the account that you've written is really fascinating, and it's been great speaking with you about it. Courtney Lefebvre, thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
Thanks so much for having me.
And the book is Follow the Signs, Searching for Linda Goodman, America's Forgotten Astrology Queen.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.